Part 2. The Noble Eightfold Path. The Noble Eightfold Path. When the Buddha was 80 years old and about to pass away, a young man named Subhadra came to see him. Ananda, the Buddha's attendant, thought it would be too exhausting for his master to see anyone. But the Buddha overheard Subhadra's request and said, "Ananda, please invite him in." Even as he was dying, the Buddha was willing to give an interview. Subhadra asked, "World-honored one, are the other religious teachers in Magadha and Kosala fully enlightened?" The Buddha knew he had only a short time to live, and that answering such a question would be a waste of precious moments. When you have the opportunity to ask a teacher about the Dharma, ask a question that can change your life. The Buddha replied, "Subhadra, it is not important whether they are fully enlightened. The question is whether you want to liberate yourself. If you do, practice the Noble Eightfold Path. Wherever the Noble Eightfold Path is practiced, joy, peace, and insight are there." The Buddha offered the Eightfold Path in his first Dharma talk. He continued to teach the Eightfold Path for 45 years, and in his last Dharma talk, spoken to Subhadra, he offered the Noble Eightfold Path. Right view, right thinking, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right diligence, right mindfulness, and right concentration. Arya Ashtangika Marga, a noble path of eight limbs, suggests the interbeing nature of these eight elements of the path. Each limb contains all the other seven. Please use your intelligence to apply the elements of the Noble Eightfold Path in your daily life. Chapter 9. Right View. The first practice of the Noble Eightfold Path is right view, Samyak Drishti. Right view is, first of all, a deep understanding of the four noble truths. Our suffering, the making of our suffering, the fact that our suffering can be transformed, and the path of transformation. The Buddha said that right view is to have faith and confidence that there are people who have been able to transform their suffering. Venerable Shariputra added that right view is knowing which of the four kinds of nutriments that we have ingested have brought about what has come to be. Shariputra described right view as the ability to distinguish wholesome roots, kushala mula, from unwholesome roots, akushala mula. In each of us, there are wholesome and unwholesome roots, or seeds, in the depths of our consciousness. If you are a loyal person, it is because the seed of loyalty is in you. But don't think that the seed of betrayal isn't also in you. If you live in an environment where your seed of loyalty is watered, you will be a loyal person. But if your seed of betrayal is watered, you may betray even those you love. You'll feel guilty about it, but if the seed of betrayal in you becomes strong, you may do it. The practice of mindfulness helps us identify all the seeds in our store consciousness and water the ones that are the most wholesome. When one person comes up to us, the very sight of him makes us uncomfortable. But when someone else walks by, we like her right away. Something in each of them touches a seed in us. If we love our mother deeply, but feel tense every time we think of our father, it is natural that when we see a young lady who looks like our mother, we will appreciate her. And when we see a man who evokes the memory of our father, we will feel uncomfortable. In this way, we can see the seeds that are in us. Seeds of love for our mother and seeds of hurt vis-a-vis our father. When we become aware of the seeds in our storehouse, we will not be surprised by our own behavior or the behavior of others. The seed of Buddhahood, the capacity to wake up and understand things as they are, is also present in each of us. When we join our palms and bow to another person, we acknowledge the seed of Buddhahood in him or her. When we bow to a child this way, we help him or her grow up beautifully and with self-confidence. If you plant corn, corn will grow. If you plant wheat, wheat will grow. If you act in a wholesome way, you will be happy. If you act in an unwholesome way, you water the seeds of craving, anger, and violence in yourself. Right view is to recognize which seeds are wholesome and to encourage those seeds to be watered. This is called selective touching. We need to discuss and share with each other to deepen our understanding of this practice and the practice of the five mindfulness trainings, especially the fifth, about the foods we ingest. At the base of our views are our perceptions, samjnya. In Chinese, the upper part of the character for perception is mark, sign, or appearance, and the lower part is mind, or spirit. Perceptions always have a mark, and in many cases that mark is illusory. The Buddha advised us not to be fooled by what we perceive. He told Subhuti, "Where there is perception, there is deception." The Buddha also taught on many occasions that most of our perceptions are erroneous, and that most of our suffering comes from wrong perceptions. We have to ask ourselves again and again, "Am I sure?" Until we see clearly, our wrong perceptions will prevent us from having right view. To perceive always means to perceive something. We believe that the object of our perception is outside of the subject, but that is not correct. When we perceive the moon is us. When we smile to our friend is also us, because she is the object of our perception. When we perceive a mountain, the mountain is the object of our perception. When we perceive the moon is the object of our perception. When we say, "I can see my consciousness in the flower," it means we can see the cloud, the sunshine, the earth, and the minerals in it. But how can we see our consciousness in a flower? The flower is our consciousness. It is the object of our perception. It is our perception. To perceive means to perceive something. Perception means the coming into existence of the perceiver and the perceived. The flower that we are looking at is part of our consciousness. The idea that our consciousness is outside of the flower has to be removed. It is impossible to have a subject without an object. It is impossible to remove one and retain the other. The source of our perception, our way of seeing, lies in our store consciousness. If 10 people look at a cloud, there will be 10 different perceptions of it. Whether it is perceived as a dog, a hammer, or a coat depends on our mind, our sadness, our memories, our anger. Our perceptions carry with them all the errors of subjectivity. Then we praise, blame, condemn, or complain depending on our perceptions. But our perceptions are made of our afflictions, craving, anger, ignorance, wrong views, and prejudice. Whether we are happy or we suffer depends largely on our perceptions. It is important to look deeply at our perceptions and know their source. We have an idea of happiness. We believe that only certain conditions will make us happy. But it is often our very idea of happiness that prevents us from being happy. We have to look deeply into our perceptions in order to become free of them. Then, what has been a perception becomes an insight, a realization of the path. This is neither perception nor non-perception. It is a clear vision, seeing things as they are. Our happiness and the happiness of those around us depend on our degree of right view. Touching reality deeply, knowing what is going on inside and outside of ourselves, is the way to liberate ourselves from the suffering that is caused by wrong perceptions. Right view is not an ideology, a system, or even a path. It is the insight we have into the reality of life, a living insight that fills us with understanding, peace, and love. Sometimes we see our children doing things that we know will cause them to suffer in the future, but when we try to tell them, they won't listen. All we can do is to stimulate the seeds of right view in them, and then later, in a difficult moment, they may benefit from our guidance. We cannot explain an orange to someone who has never tasted one. No matter how well we describe it, we cannot give someone else the direct experience. He has to taste it for himself. As soon as we say a single word, he is already caught. Right view cannot be described. We can only point in the correct direction. Right view cannot even be transmitted by a teacher. A teacher can help us identify the seed of right view that is already in our garden and help us have the confidence to practice, to entrust that seed to the soil of our daily life. But we are the gardener. We have to learn how to water the wholesome seeds that are in us so they will bloom into the flowers of right view. The instrument for watering wholesome seeds is mindful living, mindful breathing, mindful walking, living each moment of our day in mindfulness. At a peace rally in Philadelphia in 1966, a reporter asked me, "Are you from North or South Vietnam?" If I had said I was from the North, he would have thought I was pro-communist. And if I had said I was from the South, he would have thought I was pro-American. So I told him, "I am from the center." I wanted to help him let go of his notions and encounter the reality that was right in front of him. This is the language of Zen. A Zen monk saw a beautiful goose fly by, and he wanted to share this joy with his elder brother who was walking beside him. But at that moment, the other monk had bent down to remove a pebble from his sandal. By the time he looked up, the goose had already flown by. He asked, "What did you want me to see?" But the younger monk could only remain silent. Master Tai Shu said, "As long as the tree is behind you, you can see only its shadow. If you want to touch the reality, you have to turn around." Image teaching uses words and ideas. Substance teaching communicates by the way you live. If you come to Plum Village for one day, you have an idea about Plum Village, but that idea isn't really Plum Village. You might say, "I've been to Plum Village," but in fact, you've really only been to your idea of Plum Village. Your idea might be slightly better than that of someone who has never been there, but it's still only an idea. It is not the true Plum Village. Your concept or perception of reality is not reality. When you are caught in your perceptions and ideas, you lose reality. To practice is to go beyond ideas so you can arrive at the suchness of things. No idea is the path of non-conception. As long as there is an idea, there is no reality, no truth. No idea means no wrong idea, no wrong conception. It does not mean no mindfulness. Because of mindfulness, when something is right, we know it's right. And when something is wrong, we know it's wrong. We are practicing sitting meditation, and we see a bowl of tomato soup in our mind's eye. So we think that is wrong practice, because we are supposed to be mindful of our breathing. But if we practice mindfulness, we will say, "I am breathing in, and I am thinking about tomato soup." That is right mindfulness already. Rightness or wrongness is not objective. It is subjective. Relatively speaking, there are right views and there are wrong views. But if we look more deeply, we see that all views are wrong views. No view can ever be the truth. It is just from one point. That is why it is called a point of view. If we go to another point, we will see things differently and realize that our first view was not entirely right. Buddhism is not a collection of views. It is a practice to help us eliminate wrong views. The quality of our views can always be improved. From the viewpoint of ultimate reality, right view is the absence of all views. When we begin the practice, our view is a vague idea about the teachings. But conceptual knowledge is never enough. The seeds of right view, the seed of Buddhahood, are in us, but they are obscured by so many layers of ignorance, sorrow, and disappointment. We have to put our views into practice. In the process of learning, reflecting, and practicing, our view becomes increasingly wise based on our real experience. When we practice right mindfulness, we see the seed of Buddhahood in everyone, including ourselves. This is right view. Sometimes it is described as the mother of all Buddhas, Prajna Paramita, the energy of love and understanding that has the power to free us. When we practice mindful living, our right view will blossom, and all the other elements of us will flower also. The eight practices of the Noble Eightfold Path nourish each other. As our view becomes more right, the other elements of the Eightfold Path in us also deepen. Right speech is based on right view, and it also nourishes right view. Right mindfulness and right concentration strengthen and deepen right view. Right action has to be based on right view. Right livelihood clarifies right view. Right view is both a cause and an effect of all the other elements of the path. Chapter 10. Right Thinking. When right view is solid in us, we have right thinking, samyak samkalpa. We need right view at the foundation of our thinking. And if we train ourselves in right thinking, our right view will improve. Thinking is the speech of our mind. Right thinking makes our speech clear and beneficial. Because thinking often leads to action, right thinking is needed to take us down the path of right action. Right thinking reflects the way things are. Wrong thinking causes us to see in an upside-down way, viparyasa. But to practice right thinking is not easy. Our mind is often thinking about one thing while our body is doing another. Mind and body are not unified. Conscious breathing is an important link. When we concentrate on our breathing, we bring body and mind back together and become whole again. When Descartes said, "I think, therefore I am," he meant that we can prove our existence by the fact that our thinking exists. He concluded that because we are thinking, we are really there, existing. I would conclude the opposite. I think, therefore I am not. As long as mind and body are not together, we get lost and we cannot really say that we are here. If we practice breathing mindfully, then touching the healing and refreshing elements that are already within and around us, we will find peace and solidity. Mindful breathing helps us stop being preoccupied by sorrows of the past and anxieties about the future. It helps us be in touch with life in the present moment. Much of our thinking is unnecessary. Those thoughts are limited and do not carry much understanding in them. Sometimes we feel as though we have a cassette player in our head, always running day and night, and we cannot turn it off. We worry and become tense and have nightmares. When we practice mindfulness, we begin to hear the cassette tape in our mind, and we can notice whether our thinking is useful or not. Thinking has two parts: initial thought, vitarka, and developing thought, vichara. An initial thought is something like, "This afternoon, I have to turn in an essay for literature class." The development of this thought might be to wonder whether we are doing the assignment correctly, whether we should read it one more time before turning it in, whether our teacher will notice if we hand it in late, and so on. Vitarka is the original thought. Vichara is the development of the original thought. In the first stage of meditative concentration, dhyana, both kinds of thinking are present. In the second stage, neither is there. We are in deeper contact with reality, free of words and concepts. While walking in the woods with a group of children last year, I noticed one of the little girls thinking for a long time. Finally, she asked me, "Grandfather Monk, what color is that tree's bark?" It is the color that you see, I told her. I wanted her to enter the wonderful world that was right in front of her. I did not want to add another concept. There are four practices related to right thinking. One, are you sure? If there is a rope in your path and you perceive it as a snake, fear-based thinking will follow. The more erroneous your perception, the more incorrect your thinking will be. Please write the words, are you sure, on a large piece of paper and hang it where you will see it often. Ask yourself this question again and again. Wrong perceptions cause incorrect thinking and unnecessary suffering. Two, what am I doing? Sometimes I ask one of my students, what are you doing? To help him release his thinking about the past or the future and return to the present moment. I ask the question to help him be right here, right now. To respond, he only needs to smile. That alone would demonstrate his true presence. Asking yourself, what am I doing, will help you overcome the habit of wanting to complete things quickly. Smile to yourself and say, washing this dish is the most important job in my life. When you ask, what am I doing, reflect deeply on the question. If your thoughts are carrying you away, you need mindfulness to intervene. When you are really there, washing the dishes can be a deep and enjoyable experience. But if you wash them while thinking about other things, you are wasting your time and probably not washing the dishes well either. If you are not there, even if you wash 84,000 dishes, your work will be without merit. Emperor Wu asked Bodhidharma, the founder of Zen Buddhism in China, how much merit he had earned by building temples all over the country. Bodhidharma said, none whatsoever. But if you wash one dish in mindfulness, if you build one small temple while dwelling deeply in the present moment, not wanting to be anywhere else, not caring about fame or recognition, the merit from that act will be boundless, and you will feel very happy. Ask yourself, what am I doing often? When your thinking is not carrying you away and you do things in mindfulness, you will be happy and a resource for many others. 3. Hello, habit energy. We tend to stick to our habits, even the ones that cause us to suffer. Workaholism is one example. In the past, our ancestors may have had to work nearly all the time to put food on the table. But today, our way of working is rather compulsive and prevents us from having real contact with life. We think about our work all the time and don't even have time to breathe. We need to find moments to contemplate the cherry blossoms and drink our tea in mindfulness. Our way of acting depends on our way of thinking, and our way of thinking depends on our habit energies. When we recognize this, we only need to say, hello, habit energy, and make good friends with our habitual patterns of thinking and acting. When we can accept these ingrained thoughts and not feel guilty about them, they will lose much of their power over us. Right thinking leads to right action. 4. Bodhicitta. Our mind of love is the deep wish to cultivate understanding in ourselves in order to bring happiness to many beings. It is the motivating force for the practice of mindful living. With bodhicitta at the foundation of our thinking, everything we do or say will help others be liberated. Right thinking also gives rise to right diligence. The Buddha offered many ways to help us to transform troublesome thoughts. One way, he said, is to replace an unwholesome thought with a wholesome one by changing the peg. Just as a carpenter replaces a rotten peg by hammering in a new one. If we are constantly assailed by unwholesome patterns of thought, we need to learn how to change the peg and replace those patterns with wholesome thoughts. The Buddha also likened unwholesome thinking to wearing a dead snake around your neck. The easiest way, he said, to keep unwholesome thoughts from arising is to live in a wholesome environment, a community that practices mindful living. With the help and presence of Dharma sisters and brothers, it is easy to sustain right thinking. Dwelling in a good environment is preventive medicine. Right thinking is thinking that is in accord with right view. It is a map that can help us find our way. But when we arrive at our destination, we need to put down the map and enter the reality fully. Think non-thinking is a well-known statement in Zen. When you practice right view and right thinking, you dwell deeply in the present moment, where you can touch seeds of joy, peace, and liberation, heal and transform your suffering, and be truly present for many others.